This is a download from the Post Keynesian Economics Study Group, PKSG. For more information and terms of use, please visit www.postkeynesian.net.
At this point, I'd like to introduce our main speaker, Engelbert Stockhammer, who is Professor of Economics at Kingston, London. He's also a research associate at the Political Economy Research Institute at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst, and a member of the coordination committee of the German-based research network Macroeconomics and Macroeconomic Policy. His main area of expertise is in macroeconomics, as the title of tonight's paper suggests. He recently published with Eckhard Heine a modern guide to Keynesian economics and economic policies. And indeed, you can hear the podcast of the book launch we held on the 8th of November at UCL on our website, which is postkeynesian.net. Our principal discussant is Jonathan Perriton, who is senior lecturer in economics at the University of Sheffield. His wide-ranging research interests include international macro, political economy, and methodology. Recently, he's been looking at the longer-term factors in relation to the Great Recession and their impact on investment and employment. So he's therefore ideally placed to comment on this paper on capital accumulation, labour market institutions, and unemployment in the medium run. So over to you, Engelbert.
Well, thank you, Mark. Thanks for inviting me, and to the people who found their way, thanks for finding the room. I'll be talking about capital accumulation, labour market institutions, and unemployment in the medium run. This is a joint paper with Eric Clare, who, since I have last updated this slide, has moved on to the German Ministry of Labour rather than the University of Trier, as it is written here. Right. This is one graph of what I want to explain. This is only for one country group, the EU15. What I'll be doing is a panel analysis, thus I'll have different countries in there. But roughly speaking, that graph shows you the evolution of unemployment in the euro area over time. And what you see is fairly low unemployment rates in the 60s and until the mid-70s, and sharp increase thereafter. And then we got bumps and ups and downs in the 80s and 90s, but unemployment stayed at much higher level in the 80s and 90s. Now, the country experiences differ somewhat, but at least for the European countries, that pattern holds for most of them. That is roughly what we want to explain. And what we are doing is we are responding to two basic arguments or streams in the literature. I'll quote Steve Nichol, who's written many well-known papers on unemployment, is claiming that broad movements in unemployment across the OECD can be explained by shifts in labor market institutions. That is the broad claim that is shared by what you would call the mainstream of economics. That is what IMF studies, the OECD, would one way or another tell you. And that is also what most macroeconomics textbooks would tell you. So it's a kind of reincarnation of the old neoclassical argument that if you have unemployment, it must be a problem in the labor market. That, of course, is quite different from the Keynesian approach. The Keynesian approach, Keynes's argument, was always, if you have unemployment, it's really a problem in the goods market. It's a problem of effective demand, and high unemployment is a consequence or expression of that. And I've illustrated that by a quotation from Keynes's 37 Quarterly Journal of Economics paper, where he says, the theory can be summed up by saying, given the psychology of the public, the level of output employment as a whole depends on the amount of investment. So for him, it's investment expenditure that are driving the whole thing. Now, the Keynesian story of investment, of course, is an elaborate one. It goes about fundamental uncertainty, animal spirits, and that is what makes investment expenditures such an erratic and crucial variable in the Keynesian or post-Keynesian analysis. Now, for the purposes of this paper, I'm not interested in what determines investment. I'm only interested in what determines unemployment. And I'll basically set it up as a horse race between labor market institutions on the one hand and capital accumulation or investment expenditure on the other hand, controlling for a few other things. That was kind of the motivation, the non-technical explanation of what we're doing. Now, let's get a little bit more technically. There the overview is that the mainstream view is that the medium run or natural rate of unemployment, the literature often calls it natural rate of unemployment, or more technically, NAIRU unemployment. The NAIRU is the non-accelerating inflation rate of unemployment, the rate of unemployment where inflation is stable. According to the mainstream view, unemployment is essentially due to protective labor market institutions, less technically put, the welfare state. Now, there's a recent literature that says it's a little bit more complicated. It's about the interaction between labor market institutions and macroeconomic shocks, but still the active role in the story typically are the macroeconomic shocks. Now, that story, that story has dominated mainstream economic thinking for a long time and found a famous expression in 94 OECD job studies. But you have various papers, various IMF papers or European Commission papers that essentially tell you the same thing. Now, interestingly, the OECD 2006 employment outlook is much more cautious in its conclusions, and we will actually be using the data set that they are using, which is the most up-to-date OECD data set on labor market institutions. Now, curiously, the OECD study is much more cautious when it is about the analysis of the determinants of unemployment. It is not a whole lot more cautious when it is about the policy conclusions. The policy conclusion of that study, in my view, are quite at odds with the analytical results, which are fairly weak. So the OECD itself has become more cautious and nuanced in its position. But there also have been several studies, most famously probably work by David Howell, the late Andrew Glynn, and others, that show extensively and with quite tedious attempts to replicate mainstream studies that their findings actually are not robust, and labor market institutions actually have quite conflicting, if any, effects on unemployment. And there's another less well-known, but in terms of the craftsmanship, actually very strong study by Baccaro and Ray that came out notably in a political science journal, not in an economics journal, an international organization. So this puts us back to the question, what are the causes of medium-run unemployment, if even the OECD admits that the evidence for labor market institutions is qualified? And this is where our paper comes in, and we're picking up the Keynesian argument that capital accumulation and investment expenditure may be the key determinant. Now, there actually is a modest but obviously existing Keynesian-motivated literature on the role of capital accumulation and its effect on unemployment, but that literature, by and large, does not take labor market institutions very seriously. And the contribution of this paper is that we are having the most up-to-date labor market institutions data set, and we are including capital accumulation. At least our interpretation of the literature is that they so far have done either or, and we do both. So what we'll be doing is we're estimating unemployment equation as a function of various labor market institutions, of various macroeconomic shocks, that's the MS, end of capital accumulation. We do so for 20 OECD countries. We do that in a medium run panel analysis. Thus, we use non-overlapping five-year averages. We use two labor market institution data sets. One is the OECD data set, and one is the data set that Howell and Coauthors have compiled that has the advantage that it has a longer time period. We are controlling for standard control variables that are used in the literature, and we are including capital accumulation. Right, the outline of the paper is, I'll say a few words, rather brief, on the theoretical background, a few comments on the literature, and then hopefully most extensively our econometric results. These are structured, the results for both data sets, then a digression on interactions between labor market institutions, or interactions with their effects on unemployment. Then comes an exercise in illustrating the economic impact or significance of the results that we get, and then a brief digression on whether it's the capital stock or investment that matters for unemployment. The theoretical background, bless you, is a Keynesian interpretation or post-Keynesian interpretation of the Nairu model. So the theoretical vision that we have here is one where actual unemployment is determined by demand, most importantly, investment expenditures. At any point in time, there is a well-defined Nairu. In other words, we have a well-defined short-run Phillips curve. So there's a trade-off between unemployment and inflation, at least in the short run. But unlike the mainstream or new Keynesian story, in my model, the Nairu is neither strictly exogenous. In other words, it's not just labor market institutions, but also capital accumulation and past unemployment that determine the Nairu. Nor is the Nairu a very strong attractor for unemployment. In other words, if actual unemployment gets pushed away from the Nairu, there's no strong forces that push unemployment back to the Nairu. As the Nairu is endogenous, the Nairu thereby effectively gets dragged along with actual unemployment. Thus, I reverse the causality from the standard model. I'll be very brief on that first because these arguments have been made previously, among others, by Robert Rothsorn, Philip Arestis, and Malcolm Sawyer, and I have two theoretical papers where these are discussed in more depth, so I'll be brief. And rather than giving you a question, I show you a couple of figures to illustrate it. Now, that's the logical chain of the standard Nairu model. It's labor market institutions that determine equilibrium unemployment. Actual unemployment is determined by demand. If actual unemployment and the Nairu equilibrium unemployment don't coincide, then we'll have a change in inflation. The change in inflation has an effect on the goods market, and that is the mechanism that realigns actual unemployment with the Nairu. Now, for the mainstream story, those deviations of actual unemployment and the Nairu would be explained by the business cycle, but in the medium term, once I use five-year averages, the Nairu actual unemployment, which will fluctuate around the Nairu, should be determined by labor market institutions. The Keynesian story, or Keynes' own story, was a quite different one. There was no equilibrium unemployment in there. It's investment expenditure that determines demand on the goods market, and that determines actual unemployment. There is a feedback from actual unemployment to the goods market that works via prices or inflation and via income distribution. The WS is the wage share. But this feedback is very weak. And if you read the chapter 19 of the general theory carefully, Keynes is quite explicit in pointing out that a wage reduction or deflation in a case of unemployment need not bring you back to higher employment because it may well have negative effects on demand. Thus, the labor market is not self-stabilizing. There's no strong forces that would pull you back to full employment. Now, the modern Keynesian approach using my little diagrams here, that I'll be using would look something along these lines. We do have a NIRO determined by labor market institutions, but it's also determined by capital accumulation and interest rates, and it is also actual unemployment that impacts on the NIRO. That's called unemployment hysteresis. I also got equations for that, but I think in the interest of time, I will skip them here. Let me just say a few words on NIRO endogeneity, because that's a very important part of the story. Now, in the standard versions of the NIRO exclusively depends on structural features of the economy, on institutions, on labor market institutions, and in some models also on the market power of firms, but not on demand variables and not on past unemployment. And NIRO endogeneity or NIRO hysteresis argues that the NIRO equilibrium unemployment will actually depend on past unemployment. In other words, the NIRO gets dragged along with actual unemployment. Now, there are some standard arguments for that. That is about the de-skilling of long-term unemployed or the stigmatization of long-term unemployed, that they may not be perfect substitutes for currently employed workers, or may not be perceived as proper substitutes for presently employed workers. But the case for, now the standard arguments usually end up arguing that the long-term unemployed don't exercise enough wage pressure on the employed workers, and that is the reason why you have unemployment persistence. Now there's a much broader case for NIRO endogeneity. The first, one of my favorite, is endogenous wage aspiration. That simply argues that workers can regard any wage that they're getting, no matter whether that's the equilibrium wage or disequilibrium wage, as an appropriate wage at a given employment level. In other words, the wage setting curve can get shifted if the actual wage deviates from the equilibrium wage. Second, depending on the production function that you assume, there may be imperfect substitution between capital and labor. Bob Robson has written several papers on that. The capital stock may also, for a given level of output, have an effect on the market power of firms, in the sense that for a higher capital stock for a given output, you have lower capacity utilization that could decrease the price setting power. Right. Looking at the empirical literature, I've already mentioned there's a large mainstream literature that tries to identify the effect of labor market institutions of unemployment. Mostly this literature uses panel analysis. That is why we are also using panel analysis. There's two basic Keynesian criticisms. The first is a negative one, that is that labor market institutions actually don't explain actual movements in unemployment. That is what David Howell and Baccaro and Ray have done extensively. The second one is to offer an alternative, and that alternative is that demand is driving unemployment. The most important form of that is that capital accumulation matters, and there's various papers that show that. Most of these papers use time series techniques. So there's various papers by Bob Rothstein, various papers by Philip Orestes, and some others. Usually, or at least in our understanding, there's no paper that has brought together a rich set of labor market institutions and capital accumulation in a panel analysis, and that is what we'll be doing. Now, that is some illustration. That's, of course, not an exhaustive literature review, but gives you some idea of the structure of the literature. First, you have various papers focusing on the effect of labor market institutions, and see some of them control for macroeconomic shocks, but none of them has capital accumulation as an explanatory variable. We have Several studies focusing on the effect of capital accumulation, those are typically quite thin on the labor market institutions' control variables. So that is where we find our niche to publish a paper. And that is keep in line with the diagrams that I've shown you earlier. That is kind of the reduced form equation for unemployment that we'll be estimating. So we'll be estimating medium-term unemployment as a function of labor market institutions, various macroeconomic shocks, and capital accumulation. It's a panel analysis. We're doing two-way fixed effects. The data sets that we're using on the one hand is the Bassanini-Duval data set, which is the most up-to-date OECD data set, which is also the one that provided the basis for the OECD's 2006 employment outlook. That data set is considered higher quality, but it has a shorter time span. It's 1982 to 2003. While it's considered higher quality, if you look at the data in detail, you'll find enough problems with it, which is not very surprising given that we are talking about measures like unemployment benefit, employment protection legislation, union density, collective bargaining structures. I mean, these are all variables that are quite difficult to measure. And if you look at the data set, you notice that there's a lot of interpolation going on and other data issues. One issue that for me stands out is that the data set typically has way too high collective bargaining coverage for Germany in the last 10 years. There has been erosion of collective bargaining in Germany in the last 10, 15 years that's not in these data sets. But that's just one example. The second, we'll use the Baker-Klinhauer-Schmidt data set, which is based on earlier data sets by Steve Nickel, meaning mainstream economists, that has been updated and extended. That is, at least so the literature says, of lower quality, but it has a longer time period. Now, the big advantage is of that data set that I also have observations for the 60s and 70s, versus the Bassanini-Duval data set only allows me to look at the high unemployment period. So in that sense, it's very interesting to have a longer data set. I have 20 countries, which is essentially all the Western European, the Western OECD countries and Japan, but not Luxembourg and Greece because some data were not available. All data are transformed into non-overlapping five-year averages, and that's a fairly standard procedure in the literature. The basic argument is, well, we don't have very good variables for the institutional changes, and therefore it's probably safer to average them over 5 years. That probably is more reliable in picking up changes. Now, that's the type of regression results that we're getting. So you're seeing several different specifications here. UB would be unemployment benefits, BD would be benefit duration, EPL is employment protection legislation, UD is union density, coordination is coordination of collective bargaining. Right, CBC I think is... I'm afraid I would have to look up what coordination and what CBC was, but both are straight out of the OECD data set. TW is the tax rate, PMR is product market regulation. Now that has a good sounding name, however it's the product market regulation in 8 service sectors. Thus it's actually a quite narrow measure, but it's widely used in literature. INT is the real interest rate, TOTS is the terms of trade shock, LDS is a neoclassically inspired labor demand shock, TFPS is total factor productivity shock, ACCO is accumulation, the rate of growth of capital stock, and delta inflation is the change of inflation. You got different specifications here and even more in the paper. That's with the Bassanini-Duval data set. You'll get another set of results with the Baker Klinhauer Schmidt data set later on. What we find is that we do find, well, first notice that we have 2, 4, 6, 7 labor market institutions variables. Of these, labor market institution variables, only two, union density and collective bargaining. The CBC was collective bargaining coverage. CORD was coordination of collective bargaining, and CBC was collective bargaining coverage. And collective bargaining coverage are the only two that have statistically significant effects. The other labor market institutions here don't. The interest rate and capital accumulation consistently have statistically significant effects. If I do the same exercise, just for explanation, so the first specification 3 has period effects and time fixed effects. The specification 4 has no period effects, only country fixed effects. Specification 5 includes inflation. In specification 6 uses a first difference estimate. There's econometric reasons to do that, at least some people suggested. Essentially, I get the same results. Now, that's the results for the longer data set. In this specification, we get pretty serious autocorrelation problems. Therefore, the only specification that I will take serious from these sets of results is specification number 6, which is the first difference specification. There, I get a very similar picture to the previous results. Union density has a statistically significant effect, interest rates have a statistically significant effect, and capital accumulation has an effect. So the first set of results I have is labor market institution do play a role, but a very minor one. It's only union density that has an effect among these. Higher union density, according to my results, actually increases unemployment. Mind you, union density declined throughout the 1980s and 90s. Thus, union density cannot explain high unemployment in Europe, according to my results, because the D1 labor market institutions, which I do find statistically significant effect, moved in the opposite direction. The other labor market institutions simply don't show up as statistically significant. Now, that might be surprising to some mainstream economists, but it's actually fairly established in the literature. That is exactly what Baccaro and Ray and Howell et al. Had found. Second, we find quite strong effects of the demand variables. We find statistically significant effects of the real interest rate and of capital accumulation. To give you some idea of what my coefficients mean, a 1 percentage point increase in the real interest rate means half a percentage higher unemployment. 1 percentage point higher accumulation rates leads to almost 1 percentage point less unemployment. How am I doing time-wise?
Yeah, okay. You've got about
20
minutes.
That's good. Right. These are interactions among labor market institutions. Now, we added that because part of the mainstream literature is getting very excited about it, and I'm quoting them here. That's Blaschein and Wolfers, IMF 2003, Nickel et al. 2005, but also the OECD report. Now, two observations on that. First, you remember I had 7 labor market institution variables. That means I got lots of potential interactions among labor market institutions. I get 7 times 7 divided, I roughly get 20 interactions among labor market institutions. Now, if you have 20 candidates, there's a certain likelihood that you'll find some statistically significant effect. Thus, the inclined researcher will be able to find some interactions that have the predicted sign. Now, if I do all of them, that is what we did here, and then we also interacted it with the macroeconomic shocks, we'll find that the green ones are the ones that were in line with the prediction, which is that you basically expect a positive sign if you have higher, say, employment protection legislation and stronger unions, you would expect more unemployment. Now, that is not what we are finding. The pink ones here are the perverse effect, the negative one. So, for example, the results indicate that if you have higher employment protection legislation and interacted with the level of unemployment benefits. If you have both of them, or the multiplicand of them higher, that would decrease unemployment. Of course, these results would allow you to pick the ones that match your expectations. Our conclusion of that is rather that the evidence that interactions play a role in explaining unemployment performance is unconvincing. Overall, we find more counterintuitive than mainstream expected science. Now, so far what I've done is what is sometimes called asterisk economics. I've mostly told you which coefficients are statistically significant. Now, we want to illustrate a little bit what the economic impact of our coefficients estimates is. Now, that is one of my favorite figures of that paper. That is for a hypothetical mean country. So I'm taking the average across countries at any point in time. And then looking with our coefficient estimates and the actual change in the explanatory variables, what is the explained effect on unemployment in our hypothetical mean country? So that's one way of illustrating the economic content of my regression results. Now the pink line, the large one, is capital accumulation. The green one is the real interest rate. The Bordeaux to gray one is the terms of trade shock, and the blue one is union density. Two things are interesting about that graph. The first is that clearly capital accumulation dominates the other contributions to unemployment in that picture. It also has an interesting time trend. So in a way, I'm saying I'm taking 1960 to 65 as my point of reference. So I'm saying that's fairly close to full employment, and thereafter unemployment is rising. Capital accumulation contributes to keeping down unemployment in the course of the 70s, and thereafter contributes to rising unemployment. Real interest rates do something very similar. They contribute to keeping unemployment down in the 70s and contribute to rising unemployment thereafter. Interestingly, but not very surprisingly, union density, if you want to tell a mainstream story, that is where it's at least partly consistent with the results. In the course of the 70s, you can tell a story that increasing union density contributed to rising unemployment, but not from the 1980s on, because union density was declining then. Thus, union density can't explain high unemployment in the 80s and 90s. Now, that is, so that was the contributions over time for hypothetically mean countries. These are the contributions by country. So I'm looking at, that's now for the Bassanini divide data set, meaning for the shorter data set, and I'm looking at the changes here in the last 10 years from the early 90s to the early 2000s. And again, we see that capital accumulation has the strongest impact, strongest contributions to explaining unemployment. The real interest rate also has fairly high contributions to explaining. So these are now not differences over time, but differences across countries in a given decade. But mind you, the interest rate moved in the same directions, not in the same amount, but in the same direction in essentially all countries. Interest rates are highly correlated. Capital accumulation has more variation across countries, thus we also have some countries where capital accumulation increased in the relevant time period. Right, that is what I've just told you. Interest rate and capital accumulation lowered unemployment in the 70s, but from the 80s on had strong positive effects on unemployment. The union density can't explain the development of unemployment over time. And the interest rate and capital accumulation also have the strongest explanatory powers across countries, not only over time. Now, from a Keynesian point of view, one interesting question is whether capital accumulation plays such an important role because it's a demand-side variable or because of its supply-side components. Now, I gave several reasons why capital investment or capital accumulation matters, but they work different channels, at least some of the mechanisms. The standard Keynesian mechanism, that's the one that you have in the general theory, is essentially a pure demand-side channel. Its investment determines aggregate output, effective demand, and that determines unemployment. The more recent post-Keynesian literature, the literature that tries to give a post-Keynesian twist to the Nairu model, in particular work by Robson, Arestis, and Sawyer, is highlighting the role of the capital stock as a supply-side variable. In other words, it's a capital shortage argument. If you have low investment for several years, that means that you have comparatively a low capital stock, and that may have a negative effect on employment. Then there's a third channel that Bob Robson has highlighted in earlier papers, and that is that a high capital stock also has a negative effect on the ability of firms to set high markups, and that has a role, an effect on the Nairu. Again, that would be a supply-side effect. In order to look at that, what we are doing is we are basically including next to capital to capital accumulation, we are including the logarithm of the capital stock, and in the variation instead of the accumulation rate, meaning the growth rate of the capital stock, we are using log investment. The two of them, accumulation and log investment, are really very similar. They're really this, at least econometrically speaking, the same variable, just different normalizations. Whereas the capital stock has a different degree of integration. And what you see here is various variations of that. So we first do it with accumulation, with investment, with the capital stock, and then we mix either the capital stock and accumulation or capital stock and investment. Now, if you look at the results first, if you include the three variables individually, all of them have very high T values. All of them are highly statistically significant. If you include two of them, meaning one's a difference and one's a level variable, we do get consistent signs. Depending on the specification, either both of them are statistically significant, or if we include investment as well as the capital stock, there it's only investment but not the capital stock that's statistically significant. Now, that's hard to summarize what the findings here are. My interpretation of that is that the capital stock has demand side as well as supply side effects, and we have quite weak evidence that the demand side effects are a little more important. But again, that's rather weak. If I include the capital stock alone, it clearly is statistically significant. In other words, not a clear answer on whether it's demand side or supply side channels. It's probably both. These are the same results with the other data set. They're essentially the same. Right. And thus, I can already wrap up. Our starting point was that there's a large mainstream literature out there that claims that labor market institutions are rigidities in labor market institutions, or more polemically put, overgenerous welfare states are the main reason for high unemployment, in particular in European countries, and that view has informed economic policymaking. There's a literature, a critical literature out there that has highlighted that these results are actually not econometrically robust, certainly not robust enough to carry strong policy recommendations. What we have added to that literature is we have added a Keynesian variable in the equation in a setup that's fairly standard to the literature. I mean, if you look at what we are doing, this is essentially, for example, what the Blanchard and Wolfers 2000 economic journal paper is doing. It's just we are adding the capital stock. We find statistically significant and economically quite powerful effect of capital accumulation. We, by the way, also find strong effects of the real interest rate. Now, that part of our story is actually in line with the literature. Even the OECD finds quite strong effects of higher real interest rates leading to higher unemployment, but the OECD's policy conclusion of that, from that, is not that you should lower interest rates, but you should cut budget deficits such that interest rates will fall. Remarkably, there's an IMF study that concluded that central bank independence leads to higher unemployment. Not very surprisingly, the IMF did not draw the obvious conclusion that independent central banks that central banks might be made less independent. We confirm the finding that labor market institutions have very little, if any, effect on unemployment, neither in terms of statistical significance nor in terms of their economic contributions. Thus, we conclude that very much in line with what Keynes claimed in the 1930s, the capital accumulation or capital investment is the main determinant of unemployment. We didn't find strong results on whether investment, the flow, or the capital stock is the main variable. Both of them seem to play a role. So capital accumulation works both on demand as well as supply sides. These findings, of course, have important policy conclusion. The stronger one of the policy conclusions is the negative one. The negative one is that labor market institutions are seriously overrated as a cause for unemployment, and therefore deregulating labor market institutions is unlikely to help. Now, that, of course, that was already interesting when we wrote this paper several years ago, but it's even more interesting nowadays, because if you read what, say, the IMF or the European Commission are recommending European countries in crisis now is that, well, it's not only about getting their budget deficits in order, but they also have to do structural reforms in their economy. And that, of course, most of all means labor market deregulation. According to our results, that is not going to help unemployment. On the positive side, we are somewhat weaker. We are finding that aggregate demand has a strong effect. But of course, for a Keynesian, for a post-Keynesian in particular, it's quite hard to say how to stimulate private investment. If private investment is to a strong extent determined by animal spirits, by investor sentiment, then governments may not be able to stimulate it, in particular in a situation like the present one, where animal spirits, probably for good reasons, are not very euphoric. Now, my policy conclusion from that would be that if private investment doesn't play the role, then public investment should be playing the role of stimulating employment. However, the present paper is not a very good grounding to make that argument because we didn't include public investment, but there's always room for yet another paper. With that, I thank for your attention and hope I have kept my time.